This is a story that's based on a song. I'm using the title of the song to sort of frame it. But it's really about me asking my mother one day, how did you and Daddy meet? And my mother is what you would call an unreliable narrator. Yeah. So I asked her this question, and she told me the story. And like a good son and a good poet, you know, I seized opportunity. I ran right home and wrote this poem. And then I asked her again a few months later, and she told me a totally different story. But as the joke says, this is the story I'm sticking with. This is my story, and I'm sticking with it. I'm a fool to love you. Some folks will tell you the blues is a woman, some type of supernatural creature. My mother would tell you, if she could, about her life with my father, a strange and sometimes cruel gentleman. She would tell you about the choices a young black woman faces, his falling with some man, a deal with the devil, in blue terms, the tongue we use when we don't want nuance to get in the way, when we need to talk straight. My mother chooses my father after choosing a man who was, as we sing it, of no account. This man made my father look good. That's how bad it was. He made my father seem like an island in the middle of a stormy sea. He made my father look like a rock. And it's the blues the moment you realize you exist in a stag deck. You look in the mirror at your young face, the face my sister carries, and you know it's the only leverage you've got. Does this creator hurt that whispers, how you gonna do? It's the blues the moment you realize, you shrug your shoulders and agree, a girl without money is nothing, dust, to be pushed about by any old breeze. Compared to this, my father seems, briefly, to be a fire escape. This is the way the blues works its sorry wonders, makes trouble look like a feather bed, makes the wrong man's kisses a healing.
And I'm going to finish with some poems from Brutal Imagination. And the premise is that it's from the point of view of the imaginary black man that Susan Smith blamed for kidnapping her two children, when in fact she had strapped her babies in the back of their family car and pushed the car into John D. Long Lake and let them drown. It took 9 days for the authorities to break her story, the FBI and the sheriff to break her story. And so the premise is that for those 9 days, that man is alive and walking among us. And it's a big what if. You know, what if he could talk? What if he had the ability to speak? What would he have told us? So the speaker is the guy. How I got born. Though it's common belief that Susan Smith wheeled me alive at the moment her babies sank into the lake. When called, I come. My job is to get things done. I am piecemeal. I make my living by taking things. So now a mother needs me clothed in hand-me-downs and a knit cap. Whatever. We arrive, bereaved, on a stranger's step. Baby, they weep. Poor child. My heart. Susan Smith has invented me because nobody else in town will do what she needs me to do. I mean, jump in an idling car and drive off with two sad and frightened kids at the back. Like a bad lover, she has given me a poisoned heart. It pounds both our ribs, black, angry, nothing but business. Since her fear is my blood and her need part mythical, everything she says about me is true. Who am I? Who are you, mister? One of the boys asks from the eternal back seat. And here is the one good thing. If I am alive, then so briefly are they. Two boys returned, three and one, quiet and scared, bunched together, breathing like small beasts. They can't place me yet. There's something familiar, though my skin and sex are different. Maybe it's the way I drive. Occasionally glance back with concern. Maybe it's the mixed blessing someone
perhaps circumstance has given us, the secret thrill of hiding, childish, in plain sight, seen, but not seen, as if suddenly given the power to move through walls, to know every secret without permission. We roll, sleepless, through the dark streets. But inside the cab is lit with brutal imagination.
Sightings. Once the description of the guy was the composite of the guy was sent out on the AP wire, people started calling in reports of seeing him and seeing the car and seeing the kids all over the country. Sightings. A few nights ago, a man swears he saw me pump gas with the children at a convenience store, like a punchline you get the next day, or a kiss in a dream that returns while you're in the middle of doing something else. I left money in his hand. Mr. Blank, who lives in Blank, South Carolina, of average height and a certain weight, who may or may not believe in any of the basic recognized religions, saw me move like an angel in my dusky skin and knit hat. Perhaps it looked him in the eye. Ms. Blank saw a glint of us on which highway, on the street that's close to what landmark? She now recalls the two children in the back appeared to be behaving. Mr. Blank now knows he heard the tires of the car. Everyone is looking for a crush to gravel as I pulled up in the wee hours at the motel where he works the night desk. I signed or didn't sign the register. I took or didn't take the key from his hand. He looked or forgot to look as I pulled off the park in front of one of the rooms at the back. Did I say I was traveling with kids? Who slept that night in the untouched beds?
The law.
I'm a black man, which means, in Susan's case, that I pour out of a shadow at a traffic light. But I'm also a mother, which is why she has me promise I won't hurt your kids before I drift down the road. I'm a mother, which is why we sing, "Have mercy, come home, no questions asked." But I'm black, and we both know the law. Who's going to believe that we had no choice but to open that door? Who's going to care that it was now or never, that there was no time to unbuckle them, that it was take the car or leave the car? I'm black, which means I mustn't slow down. I float in forces I can't always control, but I'm also a mother, which is why I hope I'm as good as my word. Then we go to that section I was talking about, the fictional, iconic black characters come in and decide to comment on the story. I'm going to read one of these. Uncle Tom in Heaven.
My name is Mud. Let's get that out of the way first. I am not a child. I was made to believe that God kept notes, ran a tab on the blows, so many on one cheek, so many on the other. I watch another black man pour from a white woman's head. I fear he'll live the way I did. A brute. A flimsy ghost of an idea. Both of us groomed to go only so far. That was my duty. I'm well aware of what I've become, a name children use to separate themselves on a playground. It doesn't matter to know I'm someone else's lie. Anything human can slip, and that's enough to make grown men worry about their accent, where their ambition might stray. It doesn't help anything to tell you I was built to be a hammer, a war cry. Like him, nobody knew me, but in my prime, I filled the streets, worried into the eardrum, scared up thoughts of laws and guns. How I would love not to be dubious, but I am a question whole races spend their time trying to answer. My author believed in God, and being denied the power to hate her, I watch another black man roam the land, dull in his invented hide.
What I'm made of. Back to the guy. What I'm made of. Susan fills our hands with plain objects. Key, door handle, steering wheel, but my hands are nothing. A song you can't remember the words to. The button that pops off a vest. A comb that falls out of a pocket or purse.
Susan fills my lungs with air, but what do I breathe out? Parchment, ink, low growls, the blank gap between words. Nothing fits upon my back. Nothing actually catches my eye. I am hidden and found. I am north, south, east, west, my dark skin porous in between. Susan claims my name is muscle, bone, calls me tissue and sinew, fills in my blank with the absence of her boys. But I am water, pebble, silt, and gravity. Evidence under her nail.
Next of kin. The black man in town they thought looked like me without the dreamed up cap and wardrobe. The police have him now. He sits in a small room. They turn him this way and that. He'll cool there for hours. How do you think he feels? I whisper, we're innocent, into his ear. He looks so much like me, we could be brothers. Already, folks may have their doubts. He's poor enough. Where has he been? He's got his needs. What do they know? People call him quiet, a new knot of stress on their tongue. It's been a hard week to be black in Union, South Carolina. A black woman tells a reporter, the whites aren't civil. They look at you and then reach over and lock their doors. Now he is it. Susan has lent me his cheekbones, his gait. For a while, he is as close as they'll ever get. Sympathy. The sheriff's too good to be true. He tries to urge Susan and me to part. He trusts a friendly cup of coffee will skim me loose, but we're hard to untangle. I won't be easy. We know his help is poisoned. He is courting us. We run a cold sweat while he waits. He is too good to be true. I am not for his ears, Susan knows. She tries not to weep. He attempts to lean towards us. We bob together in the god-awful silence. Confession. There have been days I've almost spilled from her, nearly taken a breath, yanked myself clean. I've trembled her coffee cup. I well under her eyelids. I've been gravel on her mattress. I am not gone. I am going to worm my way out. I have not disappeared. I half slide between her teeth, double her over as she tries not to blurt me out. The closer Susan inches me towards this, the louder the sheriff hears me pitch. And this is the last poem. It's a duet. First thing you're going to hear is lines that were taken from Susan Smith's actual handwritten confession. And the response is the imaginary black guy. Birthing. When I left my home on Tuesday, October 25th, I was very emotionally distraught. I have yet to breathe. I am in the back of her mind, not even a notion, a scrap of cloth, the way a man lopes down a street. Later, a black woman will say, we knew exactly who she was describing. At this point, I have no language, no tongue, no mouth. I am not me yet. I am just an understanding. As I rode and rode and rode, I felt even more anxiety. Susan parks on a bridge and stares over the rail. Below her feet, a dark blanket of river she wants to pull over herself, children and all. I am not the call of the current. She is heartbroken. She gazes down and imagines heaven. I felt I couldn't be a good mom anymore, but I didn't want my children to grow up without a mom.
I am not me yet. At the bridge, one of Susan's kids cries, so she drives to the lake, to the boat dock. I am not yet opportunity. I had never felt so lonely and so sad. Who shall be her witness? Bullfrogs, waterfowl. When I was at John D. Long Lake, I had never felt so scared and unsure. I have yet to be called. Who will notice? Moths, dragonflies, field mice. I wanted to end my life so bad, and I was in my car, ready to go down that ramp into the water. My hand isn't her hand, panicked on the emergency brake. And I did go partway, but I stopped. I am not gravity, the water lapping against the gravel. I went again and stopped. I then got out of the car. Susan stares at the sinking. My muscles aren't her muscles, burned from pushing. The lake has no appetite, but it takes the car slowly, swallow by swallow, like a snake. Why was I feeling this way? Why was everything so bad in my life? Susan stares at the taillights as they slide from here to hidden. I have no answers to these questions. She only has me after she removes our hands from our ears.
Thank you.